Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Into the Amazon, the life of Cândido Rondon, trailblazing explorer, scientist, statesman, and conservationist. By Larry Roeder. Read by Gary Tiedemann. What does your average Brazilian know of Rondon? That he was of Indian origin and dedicated his life to their regeneration and dignity. That today he is old and blind, and that in the heart of our western jungle there is an immense tract of land christened Rondônia, in homage to Rondon. But that's all. Who was this man? How did he live during the years that prepared him for greatness? What is the weave of facts, inheritances, and influences responsible for the full tapestry of his personality? Raquel J. Queiroz, 1957. Life consists with wildness. The most alive is the wildest. Not yet subdued to man, its presence refreshes him. One who pressed forward incessantly and never rested from his labors, who grew fast and made infinite demands on life, would always find himself in a new country or wilderness, and surrounded by the raw material of life. He would be climbing over the prostrate stems of primitive forest trees. Hope and the future, for me, are not in lawns and cultivated fields, not in towns and cities, but in the impervious and quaking swamps. Henry David Thoreau, 1851. Introduction. Early on the afternoon of Sunday, April 26th, 1914, a group of 19 weary and bedraggled men, three of them Americans, the rest Brazilians, arrived at the confluence of two majestic rivers deep in the Amazon jungle. It had taken them 2 rain-soaked months to arrive there, and they were jubilant at reaching the end of their journey and the ordeal it had become. Behind them lay a succession of almost unimaginable trials and privations that had resulted in the deaths of 3 of their group, prostrated many with illness, and forced all of them to endure long periods of hunger. Ahead loomed worldwide acclaim for the feat they had accomplished, navigating and mapping a previously unknown tropical river nearly 1,000 miles long, called the River of Doubt. To commemorate the occasion, expedition members drove a wooden obelisk 6 feet high into the spongy ground the next morning and gathered around it for a series of photographs, with the expedition's 2 leaders standing on either side of the hand-hewn column. One of them, for whom the river was being renamed, was perhaps the most celebrated man in the world, Theodore Roosevelt, former President of the United States, a Nobel Peace Prize winner and prolific author whose accounts of his adventures were international bestsellers. Hat in hand, eyeglasses fogged in the intense humidity, Roosevelt seemed visibly haggard and gaunt in the photographs. His clothes hung loosely from his body, and he held on to the obelisk to steady himself. To Roosevelt's left stands the other leader of the expedition, a 48-year-old Brazilian army colonel of indigenous descent named Cândido Mariano da Silva Rondon. Several inches shorter than Roosevelt and dozens of pounds lighter, Rondon poses casually, almost nonchalantly, in his simple olive military garb, his hands thrust into his jacket pockets, with an impassive expression on his lean, copper-colored face. Unlike Roosevelt, a newcomer to the Amazon, Rondon had already spent nearly a quarter century exploring the world's largest tropical forest and its many rivers. So this was not the first time he had survived a harrowing expedition. And any relief he felt at having shepherded Roosevelt and his 24-year-old son Kermit safely through this ordeal was tempered by the knowledge that he would soon have to plunge back into the jungle and resume the construction of a 1,200-mile telegraph line cutting through the Amazon, much of it across terrain inhabited only by hostile or uncontacted Indian tribes. A few months earlier, the Roosevelt-Rondon Scientific Expedition, the official designation for the unusual binational undertaking, had traveled overland for several hundred miles along the path of the still unfinished line, on their way to the headwaters of what was about to be rechristened the Rio Roosevelt. As the explorers made their way across savanna, highlands, and arduously cleared jungle, Roosevelt was astonished by the scale and audacity of the work he saw, and on returning to the United States, would proclaim Rondon's project one of the two greatest technological and engineering wonders of the age. "I never saw nor know of a project equal to the Strategic Telegraph Lines Commission, headed by Colonel Rondon," he said. "America can present to the world as cyclopean achievements, to the north, the opening of the Panama Canal, in the south, the work of Rondon, scientific, practical, and humanitarian. By any measure, number of expeditions, distances traversed, degree of difficulty, information gathered, Cândido Rondon is the greatest explorer of the tropics in recorded history, with a list of accomplishments that eclipses those of celebrated figures such as Henry Stanley, David Livingstone, or Sir Richard Francis Burton." After his five-month journey with Roosevelt, he continued to lead missions into the most remote reaches of the Amazon and Orinoco basins for another 15 years. All told, Rondon participated in more than a score of expeditions through Brazil's northern wilderness, traveling more than 25,000 miles by foot, over water, and on horse or mule as he surveyed his country's hitherto unknown territory, mapped its borders, built roads and bridges, founded settlements, and made the initial peaceful contact with dozens of indigenous groups. Rondon, however, was not simply a man of action. Trained as an astronomer and engineer, he was purged from the Brazilian army at age 65 for political reasons, and immediately shifted his focus from the practical to the theoretical, promoting scientific awareness of the Amazon and its peoples. During the course of his long life, Rondon was born the month Abraham Lincoln was assassinated and died just before his 93rd birthday, shortly after the Soviets launched Sputnik 1 into outer space. The commission bearing his name published over 100 scientific papers, addressing disciplines as varied as anthropology, astronomy, biology, botany, ecology, ethnology, geology, herpetology, ichthyology, linguistics, meteorology, mineralogy, ornithology, and zoology. Scientists under Rondon's direction discovered and cataloged scores of new animal, plant, and mineral species. And to this day, Rondon remains the largest single contributor of specimens to the National Museum in Rio de Janeiro. Unlike many other explorers, and in sharp contrast to international rubber consortiums, which dominated the economy of the Amazon in his time, Rondon was concerned about the human inhabitants of the region as well as its plant and animal life. Many of his own scientific papers either documented the languages of the indigenous peoples of the area, some of whose blood flowed through his veins, or sought to explain their cultures, cosmology, rites, social structure, and religion. Always an innovator and early adopter of new technologies, he pioneered the use of film and sound recordings in anthropological fieldwork. Fully a decade before the 1922 release of Robert Flaherty's Nanook of the North, generally considered the first feature-length ethnographic documentary film, the Rondon Commission already included a staff cinematographer and was producing films about the indigenous peoples of the Amazon and recording their music. Claude Lévi-Strauss, the great French theoretician of structural anthropology, would cite Rondon's work in his own groundbreaking 1955 study of the Amazon, Triste Tropique, visiting the same villages Rondon had written about 40 years earlier. Rondon was also one of the most effective global campaigners for indigenous rights during the first half of the 20th century. As the founder and longtime director of the Brazilian government's Indian Protection Service, or SPI, he fought to defend Brazil's indigenous peoples from the onslaught of ranchers, miners, loggers, and rubber tappers who coveted their land, and battled the intellectual and political leaders openly calling for their extermination on scientific grounds. On his own expeditions, Rondon adhered to a policy of absolute nonviolence in his dealings with tribal groups. The SPI's motto was, "Die if you must, but kill never." As early as 1925, Albert Einstein, astonished by the notion of a pacifist general during a visit to Brazil, nominated Rondon for the Nobel Peace Prize as a way to honor those peaceful efforts. And when Rondon died in 1958, the International Red Cross saluted him as the most important apostle of nonviolence in modern times after Gandhi. In modern Brazilian history, the telegraph lines Rondon constructed resonate in the national psyche as an inspiring feat of national integration, in the same way that the building of the Transcontinental Railroad was celebrated in the United States. Rondon is thus a central figure in Brazil's transition from a haphazardly organized empire to a modern republic. His public life spanned an extraordinary 70 years, beginning in the 1880s with involvement in the abolitionist movement. In the decades that followed, he would help overthrow the Emperor of Brazil, Pedro II, reject offers to become Brazil's military dictator, lead troops that quashed a military revolt against civilian rule, mediate a conflict between Colombia and Peru, help convince Brazil to support the Allies during World War II, and establish his country's first national parks. At the age of 92, infirm and nearly blind, his last public act was to endorse construction of the new capital of Brasilia, situated in territory he had explored and helped incorporate into the Brazilian nation 6 decades earlier. He was a soldier and a scientist, and also a statesman. In Brazil, he is a national hero, whose face has appeared on currency, and whose name graces streets, squares, museums, airports, government buildings, cities, counties, and even a state called Rondônia. Yet, for all his significant achievements, Rondon has never been the subject of a comprehensive biography in English. To this day, he also does not have an entry in the authoritative Oxford Atlas of Exploration, which does, in contrast, contain entries for young Britons who later rode motorcycles across the Amazon on roads Rondon so laboriously carved out of the jungle, and is absent from the American National Geographic Expeditions Atlas, which ascribes the triumphs of the Roosevelt-Rondon scientific expedition to Roosevelt alone. Why such a glaring discrepancy between the magnitude of Rondon's achievements and their lack of international recognition? Most obviously, as a glance at any photograph of Rondon immediately reveals, he does not conform in the least to the physical image the Anglo-Saxon world has cultivated of the great explorer. Contemporaries like Amundsen, Nansen, Peary, Shackleton, and Byrd were familiar European types, generally tall, physically imposing, and often blonde or at least fair-skinned. Rondon was instead short and wiry, a mestiço of mixed European and Amerindian descent, like millions of other Brazilians, with a splash of African blood for good measure, and stereotypically indigenous features, coloring, and physique. Rondon's mission and objectives also differed from those of other explorers of his time. Many of them, especially the British, French, and Germans active in Africa and Asia in the decades before World War I, were advancing their country's colonialist enterprises. Others, like Charles Darwin, Henry Walter Bates, and Alfred Russel Wallace, were motivated by scientific curiosity and had little interest in the politics of empire. Still another group was impelled almost entirely by a sheer love of adventure and the testing of one's manhood. Though Rondon recognized that he was building on the scientific work of great naturalists like Alexander von Humboldt, his primary inspiration lay elsewhere. He was engaged, first and foremost, in an exercise in nation-building meant to thwart European imperialism. Nor was he an outsider testing himself in some exotic locale among savage races. Instead, he was a son of the Amazon frontier, working among people whose background and upbringing were often similar to his own. Indeed, while still a boy, he would say that when he grew up, he hoped to knit the harsh wilderness surrounding them into the fabric of the Brazilian state. Later, his optimism about the importance of scientific and material progress found an intellectual home in Auguste Comte's philosophy of positivism, which became the driving force in his life. But clearly, the widespread racism of the era in which Rondon operated is a major factor, if not the principal one, in both his exclusion from the pantheon of great explorers and the international refusal to recognize his stature. As late as 1929, the New York Times was still referring to Rondon as Colonel Roosevelt's guide, as if Rondon were playing Tonto to Roosevelt's Lone Ranger, and was not a distinguished scientist who spoke four European languages and half a dozen indigenous tongues fluently. Roosevelt himself did not share this condescending, bigoted view, but given the cramped, sharply defined racial categories that existed in the United States in the early 20th century, there was no place to accommodate a figure as brilliant and unorthodox as Rondon. A French-speaking, indigenous scientist, intellectual, and military officer? The notion seemed preposterous at the time, so Rondon was consigned to the subsidiary role of helper, guide, and scout, if mentioned at all. But Rondon's biggest barrier to acceptance actually lay in London. During the Victorian and Edwardian eras, the Royal Geographical Society was the ultimate arbiter of all questions related to exploration and cartography, and Rondon's relationship with the RGS was anything but cordial. At the time, the Society ran a training program to prepare English explorers for what its textbook described as travel in savage countries, a category that included Brazil. The course was based on concepts of eugenics and scientific racism, and promoted a strict racial hierarchy. In the terminology then employed by members of the British colonial service, a mestiço like Rondon was considered simply a wog, and thus not to be taken seriously or respected, much less treated as a colleague. Rondon was written about admiringly in books and magazine profiles published in Italy and Germany, and enjoyed cordial relationships with his peers elsewhere in continental Europe, especially French and Scandinavian explorers, scientists, and geographers. The Swedish explorer, Algot Lange, for instance, described him in 1914 as full of verve and virile force, said his integrity and value are indisputable, and cited him as proof that Indian blood mixed with white creates splendid men. But the English explorer, Percy Fawcett, a graduate of the RGS course, and the immensely popular adventure writer, Arnold Henry Savage Landor, despised Rondon, and repeatedly disparaged him in private correspondence and public writings, often in highly offensive racial terms. They believed he had ambitions far above his station. He, in turn, considered them incompetent poseurs, mere dilettantes, and openly said as much. This rift grew especially pronounced after 1910, when the Brazilian government created the Indian Protection Service, with Rondon in charge. In that capacity, Rondon more than once declined to issue travel permits or provide material assistance for RGS-supported expeditions, because the proposed undertakings would encroach unnecessarily on Indian sovereignty, deplete much-needed Brazilian government resources, or duplicate work Brazilians had already done themselves. To Savage Landor, Fawcett, and other scions of the English establishment, It seemed intolerable that this little brown man should stand in their way. Rondon might have fared better among the English elite had he been born into Brazil's hereditary aristocracy, but his background and early upbringing were decidedly humble. He was an orphan, born into poverty in a backward corner of Brazil where even a basic education and cultural refinements like books, music, and the theater were often unattainable luxuries. Despite those obstacles, he rose to become a marshal of the Brazilian army, acquiring a deep knowledge of the arts and sciences along the way, driven by an insatiable intellectual curiosity and an unrelenting desire for self-improvement. Eventually, he became that rarity who was as comfortable in the cafes and salons of Rio de Janeiro as in the Amazon jungle, able to move easily between the worlds of science and shamanism. In reality, Rondon was a true-to-life Brazilian version of Horatio Alger, hero of popular American dime novels of that era. But this narrative did not impress English toffs raised on Victorian values and prejudices. Viewed from the 21st century, Rondon is an inspiring and towering figure, a man of his era in some respects, but very much ahead of his time in others. He had, of course, his share of personal flaws. He was relentless in pursuit of his goals, expecting the men he commanded to be equally committed, and would not hesitate to punish them if they fell short of his exacting standards. To others, he sometimes seemed detached and distant, formal and fastidious. Most importantly, Rondon's fervent embrace of positivism and the idealism it engendered, which began in adolescence but endured his entire life, blinded him to some of the most obvious political and social realities and contradictions of Brazilian life, and limited his effectiveness as a political figure. Had he not been so rigid a believer in Auguste Comte's secular faith, he might have been able to achieve much more for the causes he cherished, especially that of Brazil's indigenous peoples. But at a purely personal level, Rondon embodied the best of both modern and old-fashioned virtues. He was intensely and genuinely patriotic, adhered to traditional codes of honor, bravery, and chivalry, and repeatedly demonstrated a moral rectitude that, enhanced by a character both ascetic and abstemious, impressed those who regularly came into contact with him. The poet, Paul Claudel, who during World War I served as France's ambassador to Brazil, once likened Rondon to a figure from the Gospels, describing him as pure, upright, and without blood on his hands. At the same time, Rondon's espousal of tolerance, cultural diversity, and nonviolence, his rationalism, and his recognition of the innate dignity of all human life and respect for the natural world and its ecosystems make him a very contemporary figure. On his many expeditions, Rondon always kept extensive diaries and journals, in which he revealed most clearly his aspirations for himself, for his country, and for humanity. He often included his positivist-inspired personal credo, based on sympathy for all beings towards whom one feels brotherhood, and the conviction that eventually everything converges towards love and the common good. By relying on science, arts, and industry, he reminded himself, it would someday be possible to transform the earth into paradise for all mankind, without distinction of race, belief, nation, banishing the specters of war, misery, and disease. That day might be far off, but each human being had the means to transform and improve himself, thereby gradually advancing civilization. Throughout his long and eventful life, beginning in the farthest outback of empire, that is precisely what Cândido Rondon always struggled to achieve. He was the man who came from nothing and gave everything he had to Brazil. Part 1. Chapter 1. beyond the end of the world. In his final years, he would be celebrated throughout Brazil as the Peace General. But the man whom the world would come to know as Rondon was born barely 25 miles from the main front of the most devastating conflict in the history of independent Latin America. Brazil and its neighbor, Paraguay, were at that moment just a few months into a bloody confrontation that would last 5 years, eventually drawing Argentina and Uruguay into the war, and leave an estimated 400,000 people dead and 1 million more wounded, homeless, or displaced. Paraguayan troops had invaded Mato Grosso, one of the biggest, poorest, and most isolated provinces of the much larger Empire of Brazil, late in 1864. By early the next year, they had advanced to Coxim, just south of the hamlet of Mimoso, where Cândido Mariano Evangelista da Silva was born. Because Mato Grosso, the name means thick forest or dense jungle in Portuguese, was so remote and backward, Rondon could never be sure of his birth date. Out on Brazil's western frontier in those days, the national government's administrative services were minimal, including the registration of births, deaths, and marriages. When Rondon enrolled in Brazil's military academy in the mid-1880s, he gave his date of birth as April 30th, 1865. But later, as an officer, he asked that the date be changed to May 5th, based on a belated discovery of Roman Catholic Church records, in which a priest recalled baptizing the infant Cândido Mariano on August 5th, about 3 months after his birth. Other church records, though, suggest he may have been born as early as March 21st, the start of autumn in the Southern Hemisphere. Eventually, May 5th came to be the accepted birth date, and today it is a minor Brazilian holiday known as National Communications Day, commemorating the remarkable feat for which Rondon is best known, overseeing the installation of thousands of miles of telegraph lines across inhospitable terrain, enabling communication for the first time over vast distances. In 1865, Brazil was a sprawling, ungainly country, held together by little more than the Portuguese language and the popularity of the only monarchy in the Western Hemisphere. Emperor Pedro II, known as the Magnanimous, was an enlightened and relatively progressive sovereign, deeply interested in science and culture, opposed to slavery, then still legal in Brazil, and painfully aware of the economic and social backwardness of his realm. But the slavocrat plantation owners who dominated the country's political elite often thwarted his reformist impulses. These owners of sugar and coffee estates, who spent most of their time in the capital, had little interest in the development or welfare of faraway provinces like Mato Grosso, whose inhabitants they disdained as uncivilized and publicly compared to wild animals. Among the planter elite, prejudice against the country's indigenous population, several million strong when the Portuguese arrived in 1500, but reduced by disease, bloodshed, and plunder to under 1 million by the middle of the 19th century, was particularly virulent. Africans, many of the plantation owners believed, could at least be made productive through forced labor once enslaved. But Indians? They ferociously resisted capture and encroachments on their ancestral lands, and, when apprehended, would often refuse to work, seemingly willing themselves to die rather than cooperate. In 1852, William Herndon, an American naval officer traveling in the Amazon, summed up the sentiment about Indians he heard from the Brazilian elite. "The best use to which an Indian can be put is to hang him," he was repeatedly told, "because he makes a bad citizen and a worse slave." Rondon's early life was one of hardship. His father, Cândido Mariano da Silva, was an itinerant peddler of European, indigenous, and African descent who died 5 months before Rondon's birth, just as the conflict with Paraguay was beginning. As with Rondon's birth date, the cause of his father's death cannot be precisely determined. Many local accounts say he died of smallpox, but others cite malaria, or even suggest he died fighting in the War of the Triple Alliance, the only time Brazilians have waged war on their own soil. Given the chaotic circumstances and unhealthy...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?